Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Hubbard Hall Center for the Arts and Education in Cambridge, New York presents Stupid F***ing Bird, a new adaptation of Chekhov's The Seagull by Aaron Posner, January 24th through February 2nd. The show is produced in partnership with Bennington College. An aspiring director rampages against the art created by his mother's generation. A young actress wrestles with an aging Hollywood star for the affections of a renowned novelist. And everyone discovers just how disappointing love, art, and growing up can be. I'm joined by director Kirk Jackson, actor Jesse Pennington, and executive and artistic director of Hubbard Hall, David Snyder. Welcome. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
David, let's begin with you. Tell me about the partnership with Bennington College briefly and then choosing this show for production this year.
Sure. So we, a couple of years ago after I had gotten to Hubbard Hall, we started to do regularly sort of field work term opportunities for students. Students at Bennington all have to do some sort of internship during the winter. So a couple of years ago, we did a show, a book club play that Kirk also directed with a couple of students involved. And so the idea was to do this play, and this particular play seemed very suited, especially to having young people in the cast because there are young characters. So we decided to do this partnership where Kirk's directing. We have three students in the cast, one student assistant directing, one student stage managing, and the college is even helping to sponsor the show. So it's a true partnership with Bennington College and giving these guys a chance to do their first professional show.
Kirk, tell me about, from the director's point of view, directing this piece, how much you need to know or do know about the original Chekhov, how that helps or hurts as you put up the piece on the stage with everybody.
Oh, sure. You don't need to know the original Chekhov in order to enjoy the show. I do think that understanding anything about Russian literature or Chekhov, not even necessarily The Seagull, but any Russian literature, might give you some extra candy along the way for the audience. I think there's some inside jokes along the way. There's also a lot of humor just around the theater itself. The Seagull, of course, is about an actress and her son is trying to be a playwright and so on and so forth. And so that's carried out in this version as well. And so there's a lot of jokes about being an actor. And in many ways, the play turns that inside out to the point where the actors start talking about, oh, we're in a play. Yes, we know we're in a play. Or David actually has a whole speech where that ends with, I'm just acting. So there's a sort of a dissection of what's actually happening on stage throughout the entire evening, which is hopefully, well, it's funny, but it's also sort of intellectually stimulating, I think. It's makes you think a lot. So you don't need to know the actual original play to have that experience. But again, I think if you do, there's like tidbits of enjoyable stuff along the way.
You said the actors break, well, you didn't say it in these words, but the actors break the fourth wall, they address the audience. What is it like directing that before there is an audience? How does that work? How do you rehearse that,
that
before there's an
tricky
audience?
Yes, it's very hard. Go ahead, Jesse.
Well, yeah, Jesse, you speak to that.
Yeah, I try to look at the actors in the room, and I try to look at Kirk. I think I direct a lot of the lines that I have to take to Kirk, so you're the audience for all.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a nice thing. I think the play lives in a kind of, it likes to break the fourth wall, and I think it's different from The Seagull in that sense, because I think there's a couple monologues in Seagull where that happens, but in this, actually, during scenes, like with dialogue, not just a monologue, you can. There's a lot of liberty to play with the audience. So I think if you come and see this, you'll be engaged a lot more than you might typically is in a Chekhov play.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's always true that the play doesn't really happen until the audience is in the room. That's when a play really happens. And especially with this kind of thing, that's going
especially
to make the
play.
Event.
Yeah,
you know,
totally
the event
agree.
Is going to be different every time. And so it's also part of the opportunity of seeing it as an audience member, like you're going to help us make the play. And it is one of the things where we kind of need that to actually complete the circle, is once the play is open and we have people there in the seats is when the thing is actually going to happen.
Yes, as you know, sir, because you read it, that the very first thing that happens in the play is one of the actors says to the audience, we're not going to start until someone in the audience tells us to start.
Start
the effing play.
Right.
And so
that will be, I imagine, tense as you're on stage hoping they have to realize that they
later,
have to do that.
Waiting for the play to start.
And I put the audience in like four different sections. It's sort of in the round or sort of in an alley situation. So I do feel for the actors trying to talk to empty chairs at this point because it's hard for me to be in all four sections.
David, you are performing in this.
I am.
What is it like to run the whole place but then be a cog in the wheel, if you want to act.
I've gotten to do this a couple times, mm-hmm. and I only do it like when I feel like I can serve, when I can actually like that my acting can actually be a good contribution. Not that I just want to do it, but we're very clear in the rehearsal process where I say at the beginning, or we say at the beginning as a team, like, okay, I'm going to take my producer hat off when I'm in the room. I'm David the actor, and if you need to talk about this, or this, like email me or let's have a separate meeting so that there isn't sort of confusion about which one am I talking to? Am I talking to my boss, David, or am I talking to my collaborator, David? So we just try to make it very clear at the beginning that I'm going to be shifting and that when we're in the room in rehearsal, I'm really actor David.
But it's confusing then there's times... You guys look identical.
Yeah, I know. We look very similar. It's like one of those Bewitched things where it's like my evil twin. And then there's times where we are in production meeting or creative team and Kirk has to be like, okay, I'm talking to producer David now. What do you think about this? And I do have to think about, okay, I chose it thinking Hubbard Hall did The Seagull many years ago. Chekhov was a big thing in our history, mm-hmm. but I didn't want to just do The Seagull again. I wanted to do this fun new take on it. And this idea that our audience is smart and funny and engaging, and they could take this kind of challenge to do this new version of it. And so thinking in that way producerially the whole time, too, is a little bit of my job always, yes, to go like, yes, this is going to hit in the right ways. And we think that the audience is up for it. It's up for this ride, for this fun.
Jesse, tell me about building your character through this process. How have you created this Trigorin?
Well, don't call him Trig.
We got to Skype with the playwright, Aaron Posner, about a week and a half ago, and he was clarifying.
Was like,
sometimes
jokes.
It says,
said,
it says Trig, but call him Trigorin.
Yeah, yeah. You know... It's interesting. I mean, I think with this character and with a lot of Chekhov, it's really about the relationships. It's not so much about, I mean, you know, there are facts of the character that you look at and consider. He's a novelist. What kind of novelist? You know, you hear the title of his stories. And actually, Aaron said something about one of the inspirations for the play was Salinger as a writer. And I think there are certain titles that the writer Trigorin talks about that echo, you know, some of the titles of Salinger short stories. So, and there's also like an obsession or fascination with youth that, mm-hmm. you know, Salinger had and that Trigorin has as well. There are a couple scenes, not just with Nina, the love interest, but another character, Mosh, who's younger. And so, I don't know, I think seeing where the interests are, seeing where the attachments of the character are, always are an interesting way to start. And with Trigorin, it's very clear that he says, I'm fascinated by people. They're so endlessly interesting to me. And that's really that's a good nugget because everyone that he's engaging with, he's interested. He's not just trying to get, you know, ignore them or just get through the scene. He's always kind of fascinated by people, which I think writers, you know, tend to be, certain writers tend to be.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I didn't even realize it, but you know, Jesse's playing the writer Trigorin, and David's playing in a character that's an amalgamation of two characters from The Seagull, one of which is the doctor, and that Chekhov was a writer and a doctor. Mm-hmm. And so it's just very interesting that he brings a certain clinical observational quality to people, observation of people. Chekhov himself does, and then in some ways puts them in a room and see what happens. I also think the generational thing is really interesting. That's what I find most one of the more compelling things about the play, and why it was really fun to do it with some of my students and then with an older generation, that we can actually do this when I direct plays like this. And at the college, obviously, you know, you always
have a 20-year-old playing a 60-year-old.
Yeah, you always have a 20-year-old playing the 60-year-old.
Right, a little bit of age makeup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for some reason, we don't need it this time. I was emailing some classmates of Jesse and mine from grad school, like, we don't need the age makeup this time. It just seems weird. It's not the same as 20 years ago. I don't need the age lines.
And it's
lines.
Actually funny. David and I went to NYU grad acting together, and when I actually was in The Seagull, he was in Vanya, and I played Soren, you know, as a 23-year-old actor with the gray makeup, and you're playing.
Which I'm playing now with not a lot of age makeup. Doesn't need to happen.
I made a note as I was reading it that among one of the themes that keeps coming up in the piece is it's a play about theatrical evolution and innovation, which of course isn't uncommon for theater to explore itself that way. But how do you work on it without going too far up one's own what have you explore theater that way on the stage but keep it lively, keep it funny, keep it moving without it seeming like a lecture from the theatricals?
Oh, that's a really good question. How are we going to do that?
The first night. We've lost half the audience.
Well, I think one of the fun things in the way that the play works and why it's been so successful around the country since it premiered 7 years ago is that it keeps weaving that line of we're exploding it and we're engaging the audience and we're asking these real questions. And we're still hewing back into the plot of mm-hmm. the seagull. The characters are still there. And there's this sort of fine line where it's never entirely just us stomping around the audience being like, theater, theater, theater.
It matters.
Yeah, it still goes back to the characters. And one of the things I think we're finding is that sort of meta moment of like, you can do both at the same time, but Aaron's done a really good job of weaving it back into the scene, back into the character, and in a way that is interactive and fun for the audience, but doesn't require audience members who are not going to be comfortable looking at us or talking to us. They don't have to do that. It's not the kind of like rain down balloons, water in your face, sort of like you're going to be in it.
Right.
You can still have the sort of comfortable comfort zone as an audience member. And taking the play, and the characters are really still alive, and the story is still really alive, and that's what we're doing.
And also the question. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the writer, I think, also keeps it. He's just fun. Like he's got a really like he keeps things in the voice and thought of a young person often. So it's a young, you know, it's a teenager talking about theatrical form. So it's got a kind of, you know, jazzy, just out there lightness, like in the language itself and in mm-hmm. the thought itself.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And I was thinking about how Chekhov is always being adapted or new translations. Jesse's been working on some new ones and recently, and there's always, there always needs to be. And it's funny because Aaron, the playwright, mentioned how he went to one of the older, stodgier 1950s, 60s British, you know, bad
translations
in order to work on the play. Because if he had gone off of the latest, best translation, why would you want to ruin that? Why would you want to turn that inside out? Why would you want to, like, pull that apart? But it helped him to have that distance. And so Chekhov is always going to be anything in translation is always going to be revisited because our language now is ever-evolving, and the language in this is just so contemporary and just so speaks to the rhythms of the youthful ardency, you know. What he said, youth and certainty were the words Aaron used in talking about them, and I really liked that phrase.
Yeah, because he's not really mocking it, but he's also not not having fun with it at the same time.
Yes.
You know, he's sort of honoring the both sides to it, that it can be, you know.
And I think having people really in their early 20s play these roles also lets you as an audience go, they're really struggling. This is not like a 35-year-old lecturing me about like angsty youth. You can actually watch the angsty youth happen on stage and the older characters be like, I don't quite understand what you mean. Like my character Soren has a scene where he says to Khan, like, I don't know why you want to change things. Why do you want to change things? Why do you want to shake things up? So you also have characters in the play that are saying what the audience might be thinking in certain instances about why is this meta-theatrical thing happening? We actually like weave into that as well as characters, which is kind of part of the fun and part of the grounding of the thing too.
And it's sort of like a timeless, you know, question, I think, as well, like with kids. I mean, I look at my nephews and I'm like, these kids are never watching TV. They're just on their phone watching TikTok or, you know, there's always the question of new forms of entertainment or new forms of culture, I think, are like just always pertinent and could be of interest.
Yeah.
Stupid Bird runs January 24th through February 2nd, Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Saturdays and Sundays at 2 p.m. at Hubbard Hall in Cambridge, New York. Links to more information will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. David Snyder, Kirk Jackson, and Jesse Pennington, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure, as always.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.